by Ray Lynch, signals 8 p.m. Thursday, and time for So What's Your Story, the only program originating in Houston devoted to storytelling, and it's only here on listener-sponsored KPFT Houston. I'm your host, Hank Rubicek, and alongside the talented team of Greg Audell, Warren Holloman, Mary Edgerton, engineer and media maven Tatiana Gago, and outstanding guest hosts Eric Keane, Christy Gorman, and Harwood Taylor, we celebrate the power of story by placing the spotlight on tellers who engage us with stirring personal stories and treasured folktales by taking us on enchanted journeys before returning us safely to the present. Now, before we begin tonight's story, my very special guest, Dr. Loomis, has a message. Dr. Loomis? Michael? Have you come home, Michael? Why are you so angry? I see. The fear that KPFT will be off the air unless people donate? Well, don't kill Michael. Call 713-526-5738 or go online to www.kpft. The hospital gave you your laptop. Then to donations. And it is essential, Michael, to scroll to So What's Your Story as the program that you wish to support. Especially tonight for you, you will hear the most frightening stories. And no one, Michael, knows fear better than you. Well, you know what? Take a trip. A trip. That was ridiculous, wasn't it? That's okay. We're allowed to do that here.
The trips come later on.
That's right. Take a tip from Dr. Loomis, because this is the second week of our fall fun drive at KPFT, and this station is all about you. Political forums, music, a range of eclectic programming that you'll only find on 90.1. Do me a favor. Give us a call at 713-526-5738, jam KPFT, and make your donations so community radio remains alive. You know, So What's Your Story is a true icon of community radio because we showcase Houstonians and their narratives, each laced with the poignant reminders of episodes that validate our lives while connecting us to each other. We've got our co-host, Greg Audell, in Pledge Central, waiting for your calls, beckoning you to call. Right, Gregor?
That's absolutely right. We are sitting here waiting to talk to our friends at 713-526-5738.
Well, thank you very much. We're going to get back to you a little bit later. We are kicking it off strong tonight because we want to thank Kent and Mel, Lizzie and Norma. All of these folks have been not only generous donators forever, but they are true friends of the station. We love you guys. We love everyone out there. And please let us love you a little bit more by giving us a call, right? So tonight, we are all about Halloween. We usher it in with our own little Fear Fest with three tellers to get us into the festive spirit. Excuse me. They are Leona Hogsberg, Paul Topekian, and Ashley Archpioli. You guys, you're here finally. Ashley, you know, you in particular, this is your first time here, right?
Yeah, it's my first time.
Now, this is a big year. You're getting married.
I am.
I'm sure you're going to get tenure.
Yes.
And this is your first time on this program.
I would say this, the first time on this program, is the biggest thing happening.
Right,
this year.
I was going to say that. Yeah. I just didn't know if you noticed that, but my God, what more could you possibly want? You're a newbie on the program, but thanks to me hounding you into submission, and because you waited so long, we're going to start with you.
Okay, great.
Great. Dr. Ashley Archpioli is an assistant professor of communication studies at the University of Houston downtown. I had the very good fortune of serving as her mentor, and even more fortunate, calling her a friend. So how do you feel about finally being here? You're in a radio station. This is the real deal, the legitimate. What do you think?
I'm ecstatic. I'm so glad to be here and to be telling my story today.
Have you ever been on the radio before?
Just the UHDI radio.
No kidding.
Yeah.
Wow. So you're in communication all
I
these
know.
Years.
Here
this
I
is
am.
The first time on the radio. Right. That's wonderful. You teach a course in storytelling that tackles narrative healing as well.
Yes.
Great. In lay terms, tell us about the importance of that course.
So one of the reasons that we developed this course was a way to engage students in stories as a way of understanding, processing, as of catharsis, not only for our own stories, but drawing the stories out of others. And so I was just chatting beforehand about, you know, I just got my first round of student submissions and just learning about, oh, how do I package, you know, and give them information on how to best do this. And it really relates to finding the message and pulling in those different pieces and what we learn from that.
Right. Well said. Well said. I sometimes talk about the course that I teach, but it's important for people to know that storytelling isn't just a natural ability, even though we're all natural storytellers. It does take a lot of skill. The course that you teach really cranks it up a notch. You do a great job with that. Now, your story, A Modern Ghost Story, has an intriguing title because it begs the question, what could make a ghost story modern? But you're about to tell us.
Oh, yeah. So, some ghosts attach to places, some ghosts attach to objects, and some ghosts, well, those ghosts, they attach to people. It all began in 2016 when Hey popped up on my phone. Intrigued and maybe a little bit lonely on a Sunday afternoon, I responded, Hey. Over a few days of the getting to know you process, we decided to meet up. Our first date was over pho at a Vietnamese restaurant. We shared laughs and I learned more about him. We made plans to see each other again. Thai food and movies. That night we did a social experiment. 36 questions that lead to love. Have you ever tried it? It's 36 questions that you ask each other, a series of more intimate questions, and then at the end, I kid you not, you stare into each other's eyes for 5 minutes. It's supposed to lead to love. We began to see each other more regularly. I made pot roast, he brought cupcakes. This soon developed into a romantic relationship. We dated over the next 11 months. We liked to drink margaritas together. Those really big ones with the upside down beer in them. We watched movies, we made dinner together, we went swimming in the pool, and ate fancy brunches. A few months in, we even said, I love you. I guess you could say that things were going pretty well. He went to my sister's wedding with me, he helped me move into my house, and even picked out my couch. At this point, not only was my ghost attached to me, I was pretty attached to my ghost. Now, this is not to say that the relationship was always great. There were certainly some red flags that I rationalized as him being a busy person. He would often let me down or ignore me, usually on the weekends. I would spend those weekends in the lurch, my stomach turning. Where was he? Why was he not around? I would call my friends crying. What's going on? Why is he doing this to me? I would call him and text him, and eventually, usually toward the end of the weekend, he would respond. He was reliable in that way. Always reappearing when I least expected it. Then, the big final push. I was out of town for my grandmother's memorial service. He did not accompany me on the trip, and worse, I did not hear from him the entire time I was away. When I returned to town, I called him. He did not answer. I sent him a text. He did not respond. The next day, I text him, saying that it's really important that he make time to talk to me. No response. I wait 24 hours. What in the world is going on? I've been crying all day. No response. 2 days later, a phone call to see where we stand. Of course he didn't answer, and you can probably guess he didn't call back. 1 week later, an email in which I pour out my soul. No response. In this time period, I canceled my Thanksgiving trip reservations with him across the country to meet his family, and I decided that we probably also weren't going to Napa for New Year's. Finally, after 2 weeks of no contact, I asked for my house key back, as I viewed it as a safety issue and really didn't want to change my locks. I sent him a text with the request. I told him he could mail it. He didn't reply via text, but 3 later, when I pulled into my driveway, there was a FedEx box. Inside, my key. No note. I was distraught. How could this happen? I trusted him. Why was he being so cruel? So cowardly. I decided to move on from my ghost. I outgrew my ghost and decided that I would no longer seek him out, in the same way that a child outgrows their imaginary friend. Then, one day, 6 months later, I was volunteering. I had been at the volunteer site for a few hours and things were wrapping up. As things were wrapping up, I looked across the room and who would appear but my ghost in the corner of the room. I couldn't believe it. And my ghost was just as shocked to see me. However, I'm pretty sure he was aware, well, very aware, that I volunteered at that organization. This unplanned rendezvous was followed up by digital apparitions, some in the form of text messages, other in the form of social media requests. Well, at this point, you have most likely figured out that this is not a ghost story in the sense of a spirit or someone from the other side of the veil. But he does share some characteristics with traditional ghosts. He only appeared when he wanted to be seen. We saw each other mostly at night, and he vanishes without a trace. Well, of course, I'm not the only person that this has happened to, but I would like to recap if you didn't catch it. I was ghosted after 11 months. And this is probably one of the most prevalent occurrences in modern dating, which is why I call it a modern ghost story. At the time of the ghosting, it was a difficult experience, but it taught me a valuable lesson about what I need and deserve from a partner. And don't feel sad for me. As Hank mentioned, after the original ghosting, or since the original ghosting, I've met the love of my life, and I'm getting married next month.
All right. Very good. I love that. You're not done.
Oh, I have one last sentence.
Okay.
The
All
clincher.
Right. All
okay.
right. Okay.
As for my ghost, while he hasn't appeared in a while now, I suspect he is still haunting other women in the Houston area.
I'm sure he is. That's what those kind of ghosts do. Very good. Nice job. All right. Have you ever told that story before?
I actually wrote it up and sent it into a podcast. I didn't actually tell it myself. Someone else read it for me.
Mm-hmm.
So this is my first time telling it.
Very cool. Very, very cool. Yeah. You know, it's funny. You were talking about staring into his eyes or something.
Yeah.
Yeah. When I used to date, I stared into women's eyes, too, as if to say, I can't believe I said yes on Match.com. That was my look, saying, what are you kidding me? Really? Honestly, have you looked at yourself? That's the photo you sent in, right? You know, that kind of stuff. Very good. Nice. What inspired that story?
Well, you
I know you're in love. I know you're getting married.
Oh,
but
yeah.
What inspired that story?
I think the shock factor of it. You know, ghosting is a regular occurrence. I'm not a perfect person. I've done it, too. So my rule for dating is after one date, you can disappear, right? It's just one date.
There you go. But you have been a ghost. Is that what you're saying?
I have been a ghost.
Okay.
I have, but not in the same way.
Okay.
Yeah.
Very interesting. Very interesting. Love it. Leona Hoogsberg is back in the studio after a very long hiatus. She's one of the best children's stories I've ever heard, and that is no hyperbole. A longtime traveling librarian, Leona is currently at Collier Library, although her main library is Kindle. She's also a member of the Houston Storytellers Guild, and I'm really glad that she's back. You know, to entice people to the library, Leona and I had mentioned this the other day, some libraries, like the one in Chicago, it was on the news, are nixing all the late fees for past due books. You know, they don't want to shame you anymore. That's enough, because they're not getting any business. It's a tough question, but what is your take on the status of American libraries? I think Ashley can agree that our students never saw one. You know, I'm kind of exaggerating to make a point, but not by much.
Well, I think that it's still needed, we still have a lot of free resources that people can use. We're always having people coming in and using the computers, the programs for all different ages, and then we even have computer classes and English conversation classes. And then there's so many things online that are resources when you have a library card.
That's terrific.
Yeah.
Excellent. Well, that's good. That's an encouraging thought. And you have story time, I know, and you've got all sorts of things.
All different ages.
Yeah. Great. Excellent. The you have one of your favorites you're going to tell us tonight, The Boy Who Drew Cats. Now, in a few words, what makes this story special?
Well, I had a big book of cat stories when I was a kid. And that was one of my favorites. Plus, then I got a version by Judy Sima that I really liked, that actually the character was a real artist, and she put that name in. But I tweaked it myself.
Okay. Is this designed to be a children's story?
Yeah, but I think everybody will like this story.
Love it. Let's hear it.
All right. In ancient Japan, years ago, there was a farmer and his wife that worked with their family in a rice paddy. All the children worked, including the youngest, named Seshu. But he was weak and small, and often he would have to stop and rest beside the rice paddies. But then he would pick up a stick and he would draw, for that was his talent. He drew mountains and trees and his family working, but especially he would draw cats. Cats, 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 many, 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 many cats. Now, as he grew, his family tried to give him some of the supplies he needed. They would give him the white rice paper that he loved to draw on, and once they even gave him an art kit with ink and a brush. And so he'd draw whenever he could. And then a famine came into the land. The people said that it was a rat goblin that had come to stay with them. And he would drink from the clouds so it did not rain. And he would eat from the stalks of the rice so they did not grow. And the people got hungrier and hungrier. And then the farmer realized when winter came, their youngest son might die, for he could not live with a little bit of food. And so he and his wife packed up all his things and took Sesshu to the temple near them and spoke to the priest, asking if he could be his apprentice. "Well, let me speak to the boy." And so the priest questioned Sesshu and found that he was clever and quick. "And Sesshu, if I am to take you, will you be obedient and hardworking?" "Oh, yes, I will do my best," said Sesshu. And so Sesshu began to work there, and he worked out in the fields, and he cleaned the temple, and he prayed with the priest each night, and he had little time to draw. But once in a while, he would get up early, and he had such a feeling that he could not stand not to draw, and he would draw with his ink wherever he could find a place. Once it was on the temple's floor, another on their walls, and finally he did it in the sides of the book. And then the priest realized it was him and said, "Sesshu, was that you?" "Yes, sir, but I will never do it again." "No, no, no. You are not meant to be a priest. You are meant to be an artist. You cannot stay here. But before you go, I have a piece of advice. Avoid large places at night. Stick to small spaces." "Very well. Thank you, sir." And Sesshu collected all his things, and he headed out. But he did not go home, for there still was a famine in the land. Instead, he headed off to the next town, where he knew there was also a temple. Perhaps they would need an apprentice there. And he walked all day, and he finally came to the town, and there were no people that he saw, which was strange. But he saw a temple up on the hill with a light shining inside. Surely there were priests in there. So he walked and walked and walked until he came to the door of the temple. And he knocked, but no one answered. So he slid the door open and looked inside, and there was a light, but it was so dirty in there, and there was cobwebs. "Oh, well, they definitely need someone to clean. I'm sure if I stay here tonight, someone will come in the morning." And so he went in, and he was going to lay out his blanket when he saw something so beautiful. He saw white panels just ready for drawing. And so he got out his pen and he got out his ink and he began to draw cats, 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 many, 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 many cats. Cats leaping, cats running, cats fighting, cats purring, and cats lounging. Oh, the most beautiful cats he had ever drawn. And when all the panels were full, he was so tired that he laid down and then looked around and saw that the temple was very large. Avoid large places at night. Stick to small spaces. Maybe I should find another place. And then he saw a cupboard that he and his blanket could squeeze into. And so he did it. And he closed the panel. And he fell asleep. But late in the night, with the light still shining in the temple, Sesshu heard a noise. Scratch, 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 sniff, sniff, sniff. Scratch, 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 sniff, sniff, sniff. And it got got louder and louder, and he could tell that something terrible was coming towards him. Scratch, 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 sniff, sniff, sniff. And then a black claw pierced into the cupboard, and down it tore. Sashu held her his breath. What was happening? Was it going to get him? What could he do? And then just as quickly there was a scream, and the claw pulled out, and suddenly there was noises Sashu had never heard, scratching and screaming and crying and crying, and oh, it was a terrible sound, as if a whole army were fighting. And Sashu closed his ears with his hands, but he could not stop the terrible sounds. On and on it went. And the light went out, and in the darkness the fighting still continued, until finally it went quiet. And Sashu held his breath. But he didn't go out, for it was too dark and too scary. So he waited and waited. And finally, as the sun shone in the windows and into his cupboard, he took the courage to slide it open and peek out. And then he gasped, for there, laying in the middle of the temple floor, was a huge rat the size of a cow. Its bones were broken, and its flesh was torn, and it lay in a pool of blood. It was the rat goblin he had heard so much about. Well, he stepped out, and he looked around, for how did it die? And then he saw his cats he had drawn the night before, and on each mouth was blood and rat flesh. His cats had killed the rat. And so he stood and bowed to honor them, and then picked up his things and walked out and closed the door. And as he walked down the hill, the rain started to lightly fall, and he knew that the curse had ended and the famine would be done. He went home, and his family greeted him, and he grew to be a great man, an artist, who drew beautiful pictures of mountains and trees and valleys and people working in the rice paddies. But especially he drew cats, 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 many, 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 many cats.
That was a scary story. Fabulous. All right. That was scary. That was scary, I thought. Ashley, you looked like you were hiding under the table. No?
I just really enjoyed the
It's a great
voice.
Story. It was a great story, and I love the way that unfolded.
Yeah.
You know, none of you can see this, but Leona always has a way of, you know, you gesture as if there's a live audience in front of you. And that really represents, I don't do that as much as I should, that really represents the consummate storyteller, a person who's so into it as it unfolds that you imagine there's real people sitting in front of you, and there are, but you're not seeing them. So that is just, that's pretty magnificent. And I love the way you handle dialogue. You never say he said, she said at all in dialogue.
Right.
And I try to tell students about that, too. Mm-hmm. They don't get it. You don't have to do that. But somehow we know exactly the characters about which you speak. Mm-hmm. Where did that story originate?
It's a Japanese fairy tale that was translated by Lafadio Hearn way at the end of the 1800s.
Fun story with a lot of lessons. Is there one in particular? That we should be aware of?
Probably the lesson I get from it is to be wise, but also to follow your passion.
Makes sense.
Fortunately, he had some people that helped him.
You know, Grant, did the boy who drew cats draw any calls?
Not just any call, but a call from one of Houston's preeminent storytellers and a friend of the program, Mr. Harwood Taylor.
Very nice. Thank you, Harwood.
With a very generous contribution and words of support.
Harwood is also not only a great friend of the program, he also serves as a co-host along with Chrissy Gorman. They do a great job. Thank you, Harwood, so very much. Greg, do you have a score there? I think people probably want to know. If they don't hear a score, they're going to tune out.
All right, it's still 4-1
okay.
In the bottom of the seventh.
All right, just checking. Whew. Greg, you know, give us a quick account of how you became a part of this program.
Well, I told a story one day at the Moth, and I was fortunate enough to win that evening and be invited to be a guest on a radio program to tell my story. And that program was So What's Your Story?
Yep.
Oh, I was so excited. And when I came on here, it kind of just felt like I was at home because you made it so easy for me, as you do with all storytellers.
Well, thank you.
And then, lo and behold, Dr. Hank Rubicek invited me to become a co-host on the show,
yeah,
and that was over 4 years ago.
And you were 19th on the list, but, you know, nevertheless, it worked out. No, we're so happy
Had to injure 18 people that were ahead of me.
No, and this is what, 4 years, 3 years?
4 years, yeah.
4 years,
4 years.
God.
It's absolutely been one of the brightest spots in my life, getting
Thank
to know
you.
Our tellers, getting to learn the skills from you of how to conduct a radio show. It's been a bright spot, and every guest brings a whole new world to me.
And, you know, even though there are a lot of storytelling venues in town, we really are the seed, as Tatiana's going to talk about in a few minutes. We were it. We were the first, and Greg and I and Warren and Mary really did nurture something, I think. And when I started this program in 2008, Greg knows the story. I was told, well, it's a nice idea, but nobody's going to listen. You know, I was told. Nobody's going to really listen. But
how long ago was that?
It was 2008.
Wow.
Right?
I think they're listening.
I think we've done okay. And in those days, it was once a month. Now it's every week. We started 6 a.m. on Monday, drive hour. Wow. But now look at us. We are literally at, and I do mean this literally, the best hour of the week. 8 o'clock on Thursday is it. And we are sandwiched between two fabulous shows, Wally James with Progressive Forum and Lars with his Tennyson Tape Deck coming up after us. And we really are blessed to be right here. Just fabulous. Listen, Greg, we don't want him to get lonely out there, so please give him a call at 713-526-5738. If you're not a phone person, go online to www.kpft, then to donations, select a form of payment, and then please scroll to So What's Your Story as the show that you designate as one of your favorites, and we'll love you for life. Well, when witches go riding and black cats are seen, the moon laughs and whispers, 'tis near Halloween. This is Hank Rubicek with Tatiana Gago, and you are listening to Haunting Tales on So What's Your Story with guest storytellers Leona Hoogsberg, Paul Topekian, and Ashley Archibioli on KPFT Houston, 89.5 in Galveston, and 91.9 in Huntsville. Okay, real quick. Fill in the blank. A world without storytelling is like a world without Paul.
I mean, it would be totally boring. There'd be
boring. Be totally boring. I love it. Ashley?
Donuts, ice cream, cake, anything wonderful.
Say that again?
Donuts, ice cream, cake, anything that's wonderful. It'd be a world without any of those things.
Oh my gosh, I never thought of it that way.
Yeah.
But yes. Very, very
Treats.
Good. Leona?
It would be a world without possibilities.
Oh, okay.
Ooh.
Without possibilities. Tatiana?
I would say lessons or imagination.
Lessons or imagination. Very nice. Greg?
I was going to say learning, which may be close to lessons, but I think storytelling is the first form of education we've had.
No, I think you're absolutely right. It's a little bit different. These are great. So it would be boring. It would be a world without treats. I love that. A world without possibilities. A world without lessons, and a world without learning. Those are great responses. Imagine tuning in at 8 Thursday and hearing, yeah, silence. It'll never happen if you give us a call, because it really is important to know that all of these fabulous responses that these magnificent tellers just offered are reality. That is what you will do without. Treats, possibility, learning, lessons, and it would absolutely be boring. It'd be a terrible, terrible wasted hour. What in the world would we do, right? Absolutely. Now, We're not going to have to worry about that, right, Tatiana? Because storytelling is a hub. That's what Houston is. It's a hub. A lot of stuff happening here. So I don't think we have too much to fear, right?
Absolutely. Especially if 713-JAM-KPFT is on your speed dial. Let's start with our sponsor, the Houston Storytellers Guild, because it's a great place to learn about the art of telling. They meet the fourth Tuesday of every month from 7 to 8:30 p.m. at Temple Emanuel. That's located at 1500 Sunset. Now be scared, very scared, on Saturday, October 26th, when the Guild hosts one of their storied events, Skyline Screamers. It starts at 7 p.m., just when it turns dark, at Marmion Park at 18th and Heights Boulevard. Cost? Can you say free? Be sure to visit the Guild's website at www.houstonstorytellers.org for information about all of their upcoming events. And while you're on the Guild's page, why not become a member? It's easy to do it online. Also, listen to some of our past So What's Your Story programs. Every show since 2008, all listed on the menu under radio program. And if you don't have a radio, that's not a problem, because you can listen to us stream live on kpft.org and Facebook Live. We're also on YouTube, and I guess you can say we're all over the place. And why not suggest program ideas by visiting our So What's Your Story Facebook page and share it with your friends. And we'd love it if you like us when you leave. Got guests to suggest, maybe yourself? Let us know by dropping us a note at story@kpft.org, and we promise to get back to you. And don't forget our friends at The Moth at Warehouse Live, the second Tuesday of the month, where you will enjoy some terrific stories. Next month is going to be November 12th, and the theme is gratitude.
Nice job, Tatiana. And don't forget, on our website, Ashley's wedding invitation will be there. So we'll know exactly where to go and what to wear. And if you want to bring a gift, fine, but I don't know. You don't care, do you? Yeah, of course you have to bring a gift, right? Thank you, Tatiana, for an always stellar report. Paul Topekian has been a guest countless times. He's a fantastic storyteller, the consummate supporter of our program, and most important, a good friend. Paul, recently you had a slew of exchange students tell stories on this program. Warren and I had a ball hosting them, and so What's Your Story reaches out to a lot of our students, providing a rich venue for storytelling. But in a few words, what did your exchange students get from being on the show?
Well, you know, I think catharsis was the word that was used earlier, and I think they really kind of got that. They come here, they're living this very rich experience, but they're living it, and they really don't get a chance to reflect. And I think the act of having to think about what they were going to come on and talk about really brought that together for them, and I think it was an amazing learning experience.
And they were an amazing group of kids. They really were. Tatiana, you remember them, right?
All fabulous.
Oh, they were magnificent.
They were not students, but guests.
And not only that, but they were just sweet, and they were polite, and they were just some great, great people. And Tatiana told everybody about our radio, the archives on the Guild site. That's where you'll be able to hear the stories rendered by these kids. So they were terrific.
Just to add in, Pooh was my favorite out of all of them.
Yes. Well,
Pooh was a character.
Was great, to say the least. Paul, you also have a shout-out that we need to hear. You told me about a quick story, an Ubering story.
Yeah, we were
share that
we
with
were
us.
Catching a ride home and sitting in this Uber, and our driver, Anahuwa, is listening to bagpipe music. And I'm thinking, this is a little bit strange. You don't hear bagpipe music at 6 o'clock in the evening.
Not unless you were in a kilt.
And he was West African, which made it seem even stranger. And then I looked over, and he had 90.1 on, and it was Irish Airs. And I asked him, I said, do you listen to KPFT often? That's all he listened to. He loves KPFT. And then I asked him, well, so what shows do you like? I like that storytelling show on Thursday. I couldn't believe it. It was I was amazed.
I can't believe it either.
No, it was so cool. And I said, I've been on that show. And he goes, your voice is familiar. But, the thing that I thought was really cool about it was he was rattling off what he liked, what he learned, the diversity. And to make things even better, he's a supporter. So he calls in and pledges his money, and he was just
fabulous.
Just one of those really cool cab rides.
That is great. I appreciate that. We have so many people in this city who do support storytelling, And that's why the show is so important. And that's why these fund drives, I realize, are obnoxious because they happen at every turn. I know that. But it is listener sponsored. And there isn't any other way for us to support this show. So bear with us and give us a call at 713-526-5738. You have a great story for us. And this one is called A Trip to the Planetarium, which, as I think I said to you, made you a star.
Well, and I'm going to tell you, this is a bit of a scary story, and it's because sometimes the scary things are in your head, and sometimes you're not sure they're there. So off we go. It was this dark and stormy night. Actually, it really wasn't. It was a beautiful evening. It was late September, and the moon was almost full, and it was glowing rather brightly. It was so bright that it felt like it was just shining right on us. It was almost like a flashlight beam. It seemed to be tracking us. It's kind of weird. The flashlight was tracking Jerome's Pontiac Le Mans. He was driving. Cindy and Lori were in the back seat. I was in shotgun. We were making our way down to St. Louis. We were heading down to the McDonald Planetarium in Forest Park for a laser light show. And as we were getting closer and closer to the city, this beam that was following us was going brighter and brighter, and the ride was getting smoother and smoother. And this is saying a lot, because this Le Mans was very old and the suspension was shot. Been over too many country roads and bad railroad crossings, but it was almost like we were gliding along on a pond. We were just floating. We went over bridges, finally over the Mississippi, and we were coming into St. Louis. I was designated to be watching for the signs, and I looked out, and there it was, the sign to Forest Park. It was green, it was vivid. The letters were moving around on it, and it didn't say Parrest Fark anymore. It said Parrest Fark? What's Parrest Fark? Jerome is looking at me like, Parrest Fark, and he makes the turn, and we go in, and we realize at that point in time that, you know, one pill makes you smaller and one pill makes you larger, and the one pill that we had taken earlier on, it was going to be an interesting night. Somehow we made it into the planetarium and got into seats before the show started, and we did this without attracting too much attention. When we were inside, thankfully, the flashlight beam was no longer following us. We were in this, like, low, sustained giggle mode at this point. Now, I'm a bit of a tiny tank kind of guy, so I have to go frequently, and I realized that if I was going to sit in these seats and be giggling for the next 2 hours, I was going to have a problem, and so I got up and went off in search of the bathroom. This proved to be very problematic. I found the restroom all right, but it was downstairs in the basement, and the trip down was tricky. I kept feeling like gravity was just sucking me down and down, and so I slowed down as I went down the stairs. So much so that I realized that I wasn't moving, and people were walking past me, and I thought this was probably not a good thing to be doing. But the trip to the bathroom was worth it. It turned out to be an amazing experience in and of itself. It was all white tiles with black grout on the walls. The floors were black with white grout. There were these big chrome mirrors. The stalls were chrome. The urinals were black. The toilets were white. And every time I moved my head, I felt like the entire room was moving and spinning around me. Somehow I was able to finish the task at hand and make it back up to the seats. But to say that it was a bit of an otherworldly experience was understating it. Back upstairs, in the seats before the lights went down, we were still giggling, probably giggling a little too loudly, but we managed to kind of keep it together, and as the laser show and music progressed, we were having a really good time. We made it about 20 minutes before an usher came over and started telling us we either needed to quiet down or leave, and so we did. We quieted down. We didn't leave. He left, and then we started giggling again. Then he would come back, and we would quiet down, and he would leave, and we would giggle. And ultimately, we left, and I have to say that I really don't remember the show all that much. I can't remember what was going on, but I can tell you that that bathroom in the McDonald Planetarium, in and of itself, it's worth the price of admission. Now, the drive back to the college was about an hour if things were kind of going okay, if we were in good conditions, but our condition was questionable at best. How we got ourselves onto the interstate, I really don't understand. And how Jerome managed to stay driving as we made our way for an hour and a half back up to the college. All these cars shooting by us on the left while we crept along below the speed limit. I'm not sure how he did it. we finally made the exit that we were aiming for and took our turn and were getting ready to go up to Route 4, heading north towards town. We hadn't had anything to eat or drink, and we had started our trip, and we were really, really thirsty. And we were starting to kind of come down a little bit and maybe regain our senses a bit. But then we saw an oasis. It was coming up on the right. There were these two little pumps with a light out above them, and there were these two glowing boxes behind the pumps. One was glowing red, one was glowing blue. It was a Pepsi machine and a Coke machine, and we decided we needed to stop. So we did, and it turned out that getting sodas out of Coke machines when you have ingested substances you're not really quite sure what they are can be a challenge in and of itself. We were having difficulty getting the coins out of our pockets. The problem was you would put your hand in your pocket, clench it, and then try and draw it out. It's hard to get that fist out when it's holding the coins, but if you let go, there were no coins. And then once we had them out, when we tried to feed them into the machine, the stupid little slot kept moving around. It was all getting to be rather disconcerting. And then, all of a sudden, that flashlight beam that had been following us came down on top of us from out of nowhere. And there was this bright light. It was above us. It was on the side of us. And then there was this noise. There was this sound. And I had no idea where was this coming from. It turned out it was coming from the left. And we looked. We didn't see anything. I started to question, what is this? And one of the girls yelled, wolves. And Jerome yelled, car. And we took off. Now, there are times when in the middle of panic, you stop and go, well, now, wait a second. Are there really wolves in central Illinois? Are they native to this area? I don't think they are. And then you realize it really doesn't matter because whatever's coming is loud, it's howling, and it's coming for you. We dove for the car, and this was a feat in and of itself. The Le Mans was a two-door. I'm relatively small. The girls were relatively tiny. Jerome, however, was huge. His nickname at the time was Animal, and how he got that is a story for another evening. But somehow the four of us managed to make it back into the car, dive in the proper order, slam the door, and take off, just as this huge wolf's face smashed up against the window, followed by a second. Oh, my God, what in the world are we seeing? I had no idea what was going on. We took off, made our way back to college, and I have to say that evening, I had never been so keyed up, stressed out, and confused in all my life.
Wow.
The morning, without the benefit of chemical enhancement, we decided we would go back and figure out what really had happened. And as we made our way down, we realized that, it was a little convenience store. The moon or the sun or whatever it was we thought that had come out and followed us was really just a motion-sensing light that was right above the soda machines. And we tracked down the wolves. They were behind the store in their kennels, two aging German shepherds, who, when we got to them, looked at us like, oh, yeah, we saw you guys last night. And they didn't hold a grudge. We got back in the car and drove off. And I just remember saying, you know, I'm never going to do this again. This was just all too intense.
Right.
But, of course, I did. And then, you know, Jerome, being the optimist that he always is, replied, well, you know, it could have been a lot worse. It could have been a lot worse. How? Could have been a dark and stormy night.
All right. It's a drug story, right? It's a drug story.
Yeah, and then, you know, I can tell this story now because, you know, the statute of limitations on everything
right.
we did wrong
right.
has
right.
run.
Right.
And, and thankfully, I'm wiser and I don't ingest
yeah,
things like
you know,
that anymore.
And all kidding aside, you know, I say it's a drug story. I mean that figuratively, of course, because whenever we have these delusions, which can be induced by a number of things, they're always haunted. They're never good. You know, they're never like, I just saw the most beautiful woman of my life, you know, just kind of crash against the car. No, it's a wolf. It's a werewolf. It's Dracula. It's a monster. It's the creature from the Black Lagoon. It's some dinosaur. It's something bizarre and frightening, always.
And our brains make it bigger, you know, bigger than it is and, you know, more acute.
Yeah. And I love the part about the restroom. You know, Paul told a great story. Just a real short story. Real short story for just to give people a sense of what I mean. You told a great story at the Moth about being in the ladies' room at an airport, right?
True.
Okay. And he didn't realize it until later, and he comes, like, oh, my God. So I texted him, I think a couple weeks later, where I was going somewhere. I came back. I was at Hobby Airport, and I found myself in the ladies' room. And when I was in there, I just started to laugh hilariously. So not only was I a pervert, but I was psychotic, you know, according to the people in there. And I just found myself thinking about Paul's story. You know, that was it. And that was it. So, yeah, that was a horror story, too, as a matter of fact, now that I think about it. And Pontiac Le Mans, they don't make Pontiacs anymore. They were American cool. Right,
it was an amazing car.
I
don't think he ever did any maintenance to it. It ran for like 7 years.
I mean, Oldsmobiles and Buicks. Do you remember them, Ashley? Are you old enough to remember them? No, don't look at me that way. You're not. Okay, good. You're young. But Buicks and Oldsmobiles were essentially purchased by older people, you know. But if you were really cool, you bought a Pontiac, right? Right. That's
and
what
it was
you
this
bought.
Wonderful green. Right. I mean, it was this green color that just to seem to fade just magically over time.
I know. Greg, great stories tonight, huh?
Fantastic stories and really gifted tellers tonight.
Yeah, no kidding. And you're a gifted teller, and you know, it's always amazing to hear people who know how to put together a story, because it's very clear when you can. It's important, everybody out there, you know, we're approaching the holiday season. It isn't easy to put together a story. Listen to people tell stories and then go ahead and tell one yourself. There's no better way of spending the holidays than telling stories to your family and your friends. Connect with them. Take them on journeys. Return them safely to the present when you're done. Make sure that you feel comfortable sharing thoughts and ideas. Think about the episodes in your life. We're all born a blank page. A blank page, and that is filled throughout our life, and we become a book. And the question is, what do you want your books to say? So make sure that you think about the episodes in your life and make them happen. 713-526-5738 to get your donations to Greg. Or again, go online at www.kpft. And we'll thank you on the air unless you say otherwise. I want to get to a sober moment for a moment. And this has a lot to do with why we exist on the air. You may remember the Pacifica High School class issuing the Heil Hitler August 19th of this year. Some of you may remember that. It was really unfortunate. And the word Pacifica is quite specific and very important. And I wanted to share this blurb that I wrote on Facebook at that time. In reference to one of the two Nazi episodes in the news, because there were two, I want to refer to Pacifica High School. Now, this is a Pacifica station. It's Pacifica because it began in Pacifica, California. That's the reason. The heart of liberalism, the heart of open expression. And that's where this took place. So I go on. I say, all of life is an irony, really. Here we are, a program associated with Pacifica, labeled as such because it all began in Pacifica, California. Pacifica was fueled by the peace movement after World War II. The very campaign fought by the greatest generation to rid the world of tyranny and oppression, the years that prompted more pride in our souls than any time recorded in history. Pacifica is an icon for peace, except for the students at Pacifica High School, a school in the same city that gave freedom of expression a venue, allowed students to issue a collective Heil Hitler in their classroom, save one student who was brave enough to walk away. So far, no punitive measures taken. A few lost souls with a distorted sense of what freedom of speech means believed that this demonstration is somewhat acceptable. However, to openly communicate hate and pawn it off as anything short of pathetic ignorance is unacceptable. Hundreds of young soldiers hardened by combat who liberated prisoners from hundreds of concentration camps and several death camps fell to their knees and openly sobbed over the horrors they saw. Nothing prepared them for the images that would haunt the world. Imagine what they would do with the likes of young men of the same age who are compelled to serve as the antithesis of those who know the disastrous consequences of intolerance. Heil Hitler at an American high school, and the teachers are uncertain how to field it. I was raised to learn the dangers of hate. The consequences of my upbringing taught me to be a good friend, to believe in the magic of being generous with money, time, and heart, to practice the power of ethics and goodwill, and to be part of the wonder that comes from volunteering at Pacifica, the location that set the stage for peace. Now, it's a platform for hate. The team on So What's Your Story is about promoting human expression in the best possible way. It's about listening, caring, accepting. Stories can be anecdotes for narrow-mindedness and prejudice because we are all born with a blank page and we live our book. May your book be one of life, health, and peace. Thoughts?
You know, the timing of this and being on the show with you, you and I have another project we've been working on, which is a speaker event in which we're bringing tellers to the University of Houston downtown.
Yes.
And bringing, because what a lot of this misses is that these young students haven't been introduced to these atrocities, and there's so much to unpack there. But
that's right.
This is one way to bring this to the forefront for these for students at the university.
Right. Absolutely.
And so I'm very excited about that. And we're going to have a couple of students who are going to act as the lens through which the audience is going to understand and interpret the events. So,
and this is next Wednesday, October 16th, 1 to 2:15 at the campus of UHD.
Yes, yeah. And so we're going to have, Hank is going to be one of our speakers. We're also going to have Dr. Kelly Zuniga from the Holocaust Museum, and then Rabbi Lyon. So it's going to be a great program.
It should be. And I appreciate you indulging me here, because when you do a fun drive, sometimes you have to really let people know why you exist and why this is so important. Mm-hmm. It's all about expression, which isn't just important, it's everything. This station is fueled for peace, and when the Klan tried to shut it up in 1970 by bombing the station, we stood strong and came back better than ever. And that's what you're paying for: perseverance, tolerance, expression. Yeah, we have fun drives every other day, so it seems, but it's us, you and me, who support stations like this. And we can't rely on the other guy to do it. 713-JAM-KPFT is an investment in freedom of expression, and as I said a moment ago, human expression isn't just important, it truly is everything. Okay, quick shift. Your favorite scary movie, Ashley?
Okay, so it's not a movie, but I just watched the entire anthology of American Horror Story, and that's number one for me right now.
The anthology of American Horror Story.
It's a TV show.
Okay.
And so every single season is different. So the one was in a house, the second one was in an asylum.
All right. Okay.
Good stuff.
I'll have to look that up.
There are witches and zombies.
Yes, yeah.
Oh, Tatiana knows that too. You youngsters.
I just watched Apocalypse.
Yeah.
That was a great
season.
I actually don't like scary movies, but I did watch Hocus Pocus finally last year, and I like that.
Okay, I like that too. Greg?
I've got to give you two. The first is The Stepford Wives, and the second is The Ronald and Nancy Reagan Story.
I love that. Okay, leave it to Greg to come up with an interesting top spin. Tatiana?
The Shining.
The Shining.
Here's Johnny.
Here's Johnny. I love it. Yes. Paul?
Alien. I'm sorry.
You know, Alien is pretty, that's
scary.
Pretty frightening. It is. I'm a purist. You know, I got to go with Psycho. I've got to go with Psycho. You know, mother. Where is my mother? Okay, good. Very, very good. Yeah, Psycho. My God. Yeah, come on. Alfred Hitchcock. Absolutely. Favorite Halloween candy? Tatiana?
Ooh, I would have to be Twix.
You know, Twix is actually the most popular. I read that very recently. Paul?
Of course.
You know, when we went trick-or-treating, the best thing to get was money. You know, people would run out of candy, and they'd give you pennies.
I understand. Ashley?
I've gotten a penny before.
So I'm a bit of a purist. I really like candy corn. Very unpopular.
I do, too. I do, too. I eat them, you know, one little layer
yes,
at a time.
Me,
Leona?
Too. I love the texture.
Reese's Peanut Butter Cups, maybe.
Yeah. Greg, I bet you have two. Do you have two of those, too?
I'm sorry. Would you repeat that? I was talking to
favorite Halloween candy.
Favorite Halloween? Well, anything chocolate. Anyone that gives anything healthy should be in prison for life.
But I
would say Butterfingers and M&M's.
Yeah, I used to hate when people gave raisins. What the hell is that?
That is cruel and unusual punishment.
And an apple, right? And the other thing is when people were cheap, they gave you one of those little bazooka bubble gums.
Oh, that's right.
I
my
thought,
mom.
Come on.
Hey, Hank, can I thank a couple of people?
Yep, absolutely.
I want to thank one of our frequent contributors, Ms. Anonymous, who called in with a very generous contribution.
Yes.
And a first-time donator to our program who would like to be known as Just Adam, who also called in with a very generous. And we love our returning members, but it's always nice to see new blood
sure
in the pool.
Is. It sure is. Thank you, Miss Anonymous, and thank you, Justin, who doesn't want to be known.
Adam. Just Adam.
Just Adam. Oh, just Adam.
I think I know who Adam
Justin.
Is.
You do, but I wasn't supposed to tell you that.
All of you will let me know later. I don't know. Might be Michael from, you know. Okay, good. Well, like next week, Warren's guest is going to be Dawn McCarthy and Susan Gallagher from Casa Juan Diego, Houston Catholic Worker House of Hospitality, with stories about refugees. Mary is going to follow up, and then Greg's going to be here on Halloween with lots of scary stuff. We also want to extend belated wishes to our friends in the Jewish community for what we hope was a peaceful and reflective high holiday. Thank you, Leona Hoogsberg, Paul Topekian, and Ashley Archipioli, for your blood-curdling, petrifying, and menacing tales of woe. Well, sort of, right? Okay, to get us in the Halloween spirit. It's fun. Listen, I got to tell you, I love this month. I love this time. And frankly, if you don't, you're not my friend, because you have to. This is an opportunity to act like you're 11. And since Tatiana's about 11, no, you're not. You're only kidding. Relax. Okay. She can act that way, too. Thank you all. This was really terrific. It only takes 90.1 seconds, by the way, to call 713-526-5738. Greg is still out there because I am his ride. So, just wanted to let you know. Today, we're going to come with kind of a fun ending upbeat song, Witch Doctor by David Seville. Don't you dare touch that dial, because Lars and the Tennyson Tape Deck is up next with a sweet mix of singer-songwriters. Make 90.1 a part of every day, and while you're driving home, turning in for the night, or just chilling, join us every Thursday at 8 p.m. for So What's Your Story, and you treasure what you hear. Keep loving a great story, and we'll keep bringing them to you. This is Dr. Hank, and along with the rest of the So What's Your Story team, we never want you to forget that it is never too late to live happily ever after. Peace. You've been keeping love from me just like you were a miser, and I'll admit I wasn't very smart. So I went out and found myself a guy that's so much wiser, and he taught me the way to win your heart. My friend, the witch doctor, he taught me what to say. My friend, the witch doctor, he taught me what to do. I know that you'll be mine when I say this to you. Ooh-ee, ooh-ah-ah, ting-tang, walla-walla-bing-bang. Ooh-ee, ooh-ah-ah, ting-tang, walla-walla-bang-bang. Ooh-ee, ooh-ah-ah, ting-tang, walla-walla-bing-bang. Ooh-ee, ooh-ah-ah, ting-tang, walla-walla-bang-bang. You've been keeping love from me just like you were a miser, and I'll admit I wasn't very smart. So I went out and found myself a guy that's so much wiser, and he taught me the way to win your heart.